The way this place came to be is that in the 70s, the port set out to construct another cargo terminal, like the one next door. And the way so much of the port land is built, it was constructed by putting a debris dike in the bay and just filling with material to make the land. That went on between 1970 and 1977. The port placed mostly dredge spoils and construction debris, rock and rubble, to build this peninsula. And they got, you know, in 77, decided to go a different way with cargo shipping, decided we didn't need a terminal anymore, stopped placing fill, and just left what was here alone for 20 years. And also during that time, the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, which had initially written a permit for the port to place the fill, decided that the fill was illegal since the port didn't finish it for its intended purpose. The port said, well, what do you want us to do? Pull it all out and dispose of it in a landfill? That's crazy. And while the two agencies were arguing, some of the community groups in the area, particularly the Golden Gate Audubon Society and the California Native Plant Society, really began advocating for these two agencies to resolve their dispute by enhancing the habitat that had come to exist instead of fighting about it. So the port and BCDC did agree to do that, and they settled the enforcement action. And kind of concurrent, what really got the ball rolling was that the city of San Francisco PUC donated $1 million towards construction of Herons Head Park. That sort of was the catalyst for the California State Coastal Conservancy to donate $500,000 to construct the park. The port put in a bit more money of its own. I had just started working at the port and didn't have, you know, a backlog of things, so I was able to just dedicate myself completely to building Herons Head Park, which I did do for several years.
I think one of the beauties of Herons Head is it provides you an opportunity to look at the environment differently. So if you're, you know, you're not getting in your car and you're not driving out to Point Reyes or Yosemite, you know, you're often coming by bus or mass transit to an urban part of town that when you think about the environment, it doesn't pop up. But, you know, I think with the broader concept of environmental justice and eco-literacy and the programming that we offer here, it really does offer, you know, I think a really great opportunity to kind of explore what the environment is and expand the definition and make it more accessible to people so people do realize that their environment is everywhere. I think that's one of the beautiful ways of, one thing that the environmental justice perspective gives is it widens the concept of environment, and I think it helps bridge that narrow definition of the environment as something that's outside of us and that exists outside of the city to something that is integrally involved in everything surrounding us. The same way that the city of San Francisco has this beautiful park network along the western shore, I hope one day we have a beautiful park network on our eastern shore that you can have a natural experience seeing the bay, interacting with the bay all the way from downtown to the county border.
Whatever restoration project that is on this San Francisco Bay estuary can really, really take heed of the lessons learned and lessons to come on not only engaging community, but having a thriving habitat reflect that. I want to say that, you know, beyond the thousands of students and community members that we've touched and have touched the land here and put in that sweat equity, worked on their ecological literacy, we also have a biological testament to that. Not only has plant species populations increased, you know, we're looking at quantitative data, you know, we've had endangered species return, like California clapperrail. You know, let's not say that this is something that is going to change. I feel like this is just the beginning. You could see in this whole blue-green way, this whole necklace with Herons Head Park being the crown jewel, you know, as folks have said before, is really shows that when you restore habitat, you know, species as well as human populations, you know, connect with this and increase. I had a tenure of close to 8 years here with Literacy for Environmental Justice. conducting environmental education programs and community-based restoration.
And am I remembering right, you also have a personal connection?
I do, yeah, and I didn't want to steal the thunder, you know, of folks here, but this place beyond, you know, the value that it gives to my own personal life, it also means something in the life that I share with my wife and my life partner. One of our first dates was held out here. This is the type of sanctuary we're talking about, the precedent that was set when you steward a land, when you engage people, when there's some sort of action. You know, my children are almost 7, almost 4. Many times when we come here, it's kind of a reminder of that love that we have for not only one another, but the love that we have for the Bay that belongs to all, you know, Bay residents and you know, especially folks right here in Baby Hunters Point, a place that they can connect with that sanctuary that we all need.
Unlike a lot of other natural environments, this is, humans played a really large role in shaping it. And from, you know, maybe the decisions of having it be a shipping terminal to that not working out to it now being, you know, this amazing place that is engaging, you know, over 1,000 people each year, and learning about their shoreline and caring about open space and Baby Hunters Point. So I think that there are great things to come.
Anthony Khalil, I formerly with Ledge since 2004, and what's next is to come.
And I'm Carol Bach. I work for the Port of San Francisco, and I have been the project manager